host, Aaron Ripmaster. Welcome to the Man Cave, where joining me tonight to record Diz Dad's podcast number 302 for June 14th, 2015 are James Cameron.
Hello, everyone.
Richard Grady.
Hello.
And Matt Weir.
Hey, how's it going?
So tonight on the podcast, we're going to be taking on the next in our sort of long-range planning series, talking about planning ahead for a winter vacation at Walt Disney World, focusing on January and February trip planning. Before we get to that, though, I want to thank our podcast sponsor, Fairytale Journeys, an authorized Disney travel planner. Next time your family's considering a Walt Disney World, Disneyland, Disney Cruise Line, or another themed entertainment destination or other cruise line vacation, consider working with a Fairytale Journeys travel agent. They'll help you slog through some of the difficulties of, too many choices to make and too many options to whittle it down to what you're really interested in, help you focus your planning and take the headaches and the late nights and early mornings to get things booked the way you want them, take care of all of those things for you, and let you just focus on the fun. You can check them out at fairytalejourneys.com. Okay, guys. So all of us have been travelers to Walt Disney World, in these winter months in January and February. And I think they have a reputation for being a time when there are low crowd levels and when, the resort room rates are maybe lower than they are some other times of the year. And so I think that, a lot of people are becoming interested in traveling during this time period. So why don't we just start with a quick little round robin here and have everybody share, one of your favorite things about traveling to Walt Disney World in the wintertime, in January and February. And, Richard, you're I think, the farthest. We have several, actually, looking across at the panel. Just about everybody's in a northern climb. But Richard, you're up in Michigan. Well, what do you like about getting out to Walt Disney World in January and February?
Well, aside from the obvious escape from the cold white stuff, which actually I like winter, so it doesn't bother, that part doesn't help a whole lot. Both my children are born in February. So we did a late February trip this year, and it was a good chance to celebrate both birthdays in Disney World. Yeah, so that was really cool.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. All right. So, Matt, how about you? What's one of your favorite things about winter travel to Walt Disney World?
Well, definitely the weather thing. I mean, I hate being around in the sub-zero temps up here too long, so it's good to get away anywhere warmer, and that's a good way to do it. And on top of that, it's not too hot either, so it's kind of nice in the middle. So not only avoiding the cold of up north, but also avoiding the crazy hot of late summer.
Good point. And how about you, James? What do you like about those January and February trips?
I have to add that it's also drier. We go a lot in the summer and you get those, every day. You can almost time, set your watch by those afternoon rainstorms. So it's a drier environment, and you don't spend as much time. There's not as much downtime because it's not as hot and humid. So you get, you feel like you do a lot more.
Yeah, I want to echo that just a little bit and say that one of the things I really like about those, January, February times to travel to Walt Disney World are that, you don't feel as compelled to take an afternoon break because it's not so hot. And so the result is that, I don't know, maybe this sounds like an odd word to apply to vacation, but it just feels more efficient. You can go, you can do your park stuff, get all your park stuff done, and you're ready when you leave the park for that to be kind of enough of the park day. So, yeah, the park hours tend to be a bit shorter, but the vast majority of the time, I don't think I really mind, because I've gotten to spend a full day and a full active day in the parks before I leave. And in the evening, there are still restaurants and bars and lounges and things to, continue the fun outside the parks.
Yeah, you don't have that little voice in your head going, no, we can't go back to the hotel. That's 2 hours wasted.
Exactly.
And the other voice going, it's 95 degrees and pouring rain or really humid.
Yeah, and you have a child who's going to, you know, melt down the drain here.
No, I'm the one that melts down. Kids are fine with
it. So we have dad who's going to melt down the drain.
Yeah. By the end of the week, you're not, tired as all heck from, only sleeping 6 hours a night. Or at most.
Oh, right, because you're trying to take advantage of the late nights and early mornings when it's cool.
Exactly.
Yeah, sure. Well, so, those are some of our favorite things, and we'll come back and talk some more about those as we go on with the show. But want to kind of draw our attention or draw our focus back to kind of the core concept when we came up with the idea of doing these advanced planning shows, and that is really that whole bit about looking ahead, because it's mid-June when this podcast is released, and the reason we're recording this podcast so it can come out then is that if you're listening to this now, now's time, right? You should be doing your planning for a January-February trip. You should really be thinking about it at least by mid-June, because that's going to get you outside of the 180 days where, the real sort of work of putting together a Walt Disney World vacation kind of comes in. So I guess one good way to start here talking about it is what's one of the things, James, that you always want to make sure you have ready to go 180 days before your trip?
Definitely want to have our resort stay. I think that's the first thing we always want to have out of the way. We always want to figure out when we're booking our resorts, where we want to stay, and maybe like one or two alternates in case, something is, happens to prevent us from availability or maybe the price. So I think figuring out, where we want to stay is the number one thing for us.
All right. So you like to start out with your home base and definitely want to have that, more than 180 days out so that you're ready to book that. How about you, Matt? What are you looking at, kind of getting to that 180-day magic 6 months out date?
Well, we usually figure out our touring plans, maybe not in detail, but at least knowing which days look good for which parks, because that's the basis of how we start to figure out which dining options we want to select. So we like to try and coordinate those to be either in the park that we're heading to or at least convenient to be able to get there.
All right. So you're looking ahead for those early released park hours and trying to see, what your targets are going to be, checking out some crowd calendar information and that kind of thing. And then, Richard, how about you? What are you looking at 180 days out?
Pretty much the same things. We need to know where we're staying so that we can book that, so we can turn around and book the ADRs based on kind of best guesses for extra magic hours or crowd levels, although some of those we just take as a, this park will be really crowded that day, let's avoid it. Yeah, no, because there are sometimes where you say, hey, this crowd's going to be, this park's going to be really crowded. We can go there on Tuesday instead of Monday, right? Yeah, well, let's do that and go to this other park that won't be nearly as crowded, so you get more done on each of those days.
Sure.
Plus, you generally have a better chance of getting some of the ADRs that you want if you avoid the higher crowd days.
Yeah, I mean, I generally agree, although I'll be honest and say that I know that a number of times, even when I thought I knew where I was staying 180 days out, I know that our resort has changed. We've changed our minds. A discount offer came out that, made it a viable option for us to upgrade from moderate to deluxe or from a value to a moderate. So I guess I'm a little less concerned, with my resort. I mean, I like to know, budget target wise, what I feel like I'm going to spend. But beyond that, I'm less worried about my resort 180 days out. I am, however, concerned about any sort of must-do dining stuff. We're still finding that a lot of restaurants, and especially particularly popular ones like Ohana, Be Our Guest Restaurant, Cinderella's Royal Table, Ockershus to a little bit less extent. But, you know, those restaurants, Chef Mickey's, have been booking up 180 days out. And so, you know, if those are must-dos on the agenda, I need to know when I want to be booking them, and which ones, you know, are those priorities. And the other thing then also is, you know, my daughter is now, you know, outgrown that stage, so it's not even something we have to worry about thinking about. But I know that I have friends, family, and clients who, you know, Bibbidi Bobbidi Boutique is an important element of a trip for them. And, you know, I know recently I've noticed some people really frustrated because they're planning trips, you know, 6 weeks in advance and are pulling their hair out because, by golly, the centerpiece of the vacation that they'd planned in their head was Bibbidi Bobbidi Boutique. And it's just not going to happen 6 weeks out.
One other thing to throw out, too, is that, you know, sometimes all this early planning is great to get an initial plan, but we've definitely had instances where park hours change or, you know, extra magic hours change, and then that kind of throws a wrench in it much later. So,
yeah, that's a good point, that early on it's great to be planning, but you want to be, you know, prepared to be flexible. This time of year, I think especially, park hours are subject to change because the patterns, I think, are maybe less fixed in January and February, and so the hours tend to be a bit more dynamic. You know, they adjust them based on what they're seeing in terms of you know, rooms booking up and things like that, because obviously the busier the resort is, the longer they keep the parks open. All right, well, now the problem is, you know, we've all talked about things that are important to us to be thinking about and planning for 180 days out, but January in particular can be problematic at Walt Disney World because, you know, we're all ready to try and plan things 180 days out, but 180 days before January 1st, if when I plug it into my handy dandy date duration calculator, which I love, it's one of my most visited internet sites, I think, sometimes. But 180 days before January 1st is July 5th. I don't know how many of you were paying attention to it, but July 5th was a good 3 weeks, you know, more than 3 weeks before Walt Disney World released the rates for the next year. So there's this weird gap, and it doesn't happen every year, because the date that those rates come out is a moving target, but sometime between mid-June and the end of July, the next year's rates come out, and lately they've come out a little bit later. And so I guess the next question I have for everybody is, you know, what do you do when, you know, you're planning a vacation for, well, one that we commonly, you know, have people planning for, Marathon Weekend, which this coming year is going to be January 6th through 10th, 2016. You know, what do you do when you're planning a trip that's supposed to start June 6th and, you know, July 11th rolls around and you can't book a Walt Disney World package yet? You know, how about you, Matt? What do you do in that situation?
Well, I guess it hasn't really come up yet. You know, for us, we've always been planning right around that 6 month window, and I think we've generally hit February rather than January. Okay. So maybe it just hasn't happened.
So you haven't had to deal with it yet.
No.
James, I know you have.
Yeah. Well, we also have the benefit of being Disney Vacation Club members, so
okay. Well, so there's one workaround.
we can book around. And the one time we did Marathon Weekend, we booked it right after we registered. For as soon as we finally said, hey, we're actually doing Marathon Weekend next year, and we registered for the races immediately, even though we didn't have points. I went and paid cash for someone else's points, you know, through one of the many, you know, DVC point retail, you know, sites that are out there, and secured ourselves a room.
All right. So, yeah, so that's one option, is to just sort of dodge the whole package booking system at Disney World and, you know, rent DVC points. Or if you're a DVC owner, it's a, you know, one of the nice things about getting your, you know, booking window that's tied to your DVC ownership instead of being beholden to, you know, Disney releasing their new packages on a year-by-year basis. How about you, Richard? I know you've dealt with this for Marathon Weekend before.
Yeah. In-laws are DVC members, so we have that workaround.
Okay.
But the last trip that we went down as a family for the inaugural Dopey, and we just used a travel agent. we have to be there from those dates. Find us something, and we got a really nice deal at the Contemporary. So that's
cool.
Kind of made converts of us. So.
Yeah. There are a couple of things you can do. I mean, if you're going Marathon Weekend, you've got a couple of extra advantages or a couple of extra opportunities, because there are always going to be a few, special deals that are running for Marathon Weekend, either in connection with Run Disney or with travel agencies that, you know, book room blocks in advance, that kind of thing. So those are definitely options. The other thing you can do is to simply, you know, wait patiently, be ready to go with what you want to book as soon as it comes out. And remember that you don't have to have a resort reservation to make dining reservations. So if you're concerned, you know you want Be Our Guest, right? And you don't have a reservation yet because you can't book that far out, you know, so go ahead and call exactly 180 days before the day you want that restaurant booking, and you can still make a booking for that date, even if you don't have a resort reservation yet. It's not as convenient because you can't do the next 10 days, the length of your stay as well. You have to, you know, do that each day, but it'll get you there. And another thing that you can do, and this one I think maybe people are less aware of, Disney will allow you to kind of make a placeholder room-only booking, even if the next year's rates have not been released yet. Call in and book room only for that date. And if it's booked into the next year where rates haven't been released yet, what you're booking is essentially a speculative placeholder. Most of the time, as soon as you put a deposit down on a Disney reservation, you lock in your room rate or you lock in your package rate. When you do this a year ahead, there's a special disclaimer on your confirmation that says that the room rate is not guaranteed, because that room rate will automatically adjust to whatever Disney changes it to for the next year. But your deposit is based on the current year's rate. So it does ensure that you've got a room, and, you know, for certain resorts at certain times, it's worth it. The Contemporary for Marathon Weekend is a good example of that, right? Because it's on the monorail and it's walking distance to Magic Kingdom. So that one tends to be really popular Marathon Weekend, and it's into the next year. So I think that people see a lot of those, what I call speculative room only bookings, into January. But all of those approaches will at least get you a placeholder of sorts. And, as Richard was saying, you know, the other thing is that you've got a lot of people, you know, I know I as a travel agent will take and sort of have a hot list, for lack of a better way to put it, of, you know, clients who are ready to book, whose information I have ready to roll. And as soon as those rates come out, we'll hop on and get them booked. And there's usually, you know, everybody's in the same boat. So there's usually pretty good availability there right away. It's really the restaurants that are the biggest issue, because I think a lot of people wait.
Well, and signing up for the Run Disney races, that's getting kind of problematic now, too.
Well, that's true, too. But that's happening even farther than 180 days out.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, that's happening, Marathon Weekend signups opened in April, am I remembering right?
I think so. And I think that some of the stuff sold out that very first day.
Yeah. So you're booking you're signing up for a race a good.
And then, you got to find somewhere to stay.
Yeah. So those are all good things to keep in mind. If I'm remembering correctly, I think I've seen them come out as early as around June 21st or so. And then the latest I've seen them is July 30th, although I know some people who have been doing the travel agent thing longer than I have who say that they've seen them come out as late as the first week in August. Okay, so there are some, you know, it's interesting. Last time in the fall, we had lots of big fall events to talk about. It seems that Disney has fewer special events in terms of parties and things happening in January and February, but there are some calendar events that impact Walt Disney World in January and February, right?
Definitely.
So, you know, James, what's the first of the, you know, Disney events that people should be aware of if they're looking at traveling in January and February?
Oh, I mean, first, going calendar-wise, you have, Marathon Weekend that comes up. As you know, it was the 6th to the 10th for 2016. And that draws a lot of people down to the parks for that weekend.
Yeah, you know, Richard, talk a little bit about the impact of Marathon Weekend on Walt Disney World. I mean, what would people expect to see in terms of the impact on their park experience traveling, you know, January 6th through 10th in that Marathon Weekend window?
Assuming that you're not running the race, then Saturday and Sunday, at least in the morning, especially the early morning, so park opening kind of hours,
right,
transportation is really wonky. Just because there are a lot of runners, they close a lot of the roads, and so you pretty much have to allocate extra time, especially if you're heading to, say, the Magic Kingdom or you're heading to Epcot. On Sunday, some of those roads are going to be closed just because there are runners on them and they will reroute the traffic. Disney is really good about telling you when you get to the hotel what's going to be closed. So, like, I've never been there and not been forewarned on that weekend that, by the way, if you're using Disney transportation, please give extra time because this is the way you will have to go. And these roads are closed if you're driving yourself and this and that.
Yeah.
But for the morning, Saturday, Sunday morning, just it's kind of a crapshoot to as far as where you're going. Monorail still works fine. The boats still work fine because, you know, we don't swim. It's not a triathlon and you can't use monorail because that's cheating. So if you're in one of the monorail or the boat resorts and you're heading for Magic Kingdom, you're fine.
Although we should note that the last couple of years, at least, the monorail hours have been affected by Marathon Weekend because they started running so early in order to get people to marathon starting points that they end up shutting down the monorail for a chunk of the day, usually from, like, you know, I'm trying to remember. I think it was roughly like 11 to 5, you know, a big chunk of the middle of the day that they shut it down because what they're doing is their overnight maintenance.
Yeah, a couple of years ago, I was actually on the monorail post-race and it stopped. So we're up on the track, so it only stopped for about half an hour. But when you've got that little cabin full of runners who've just finished – it got fragrant. Let's put it that way. I mean, we all knew what it was.
Welcome the smell of old Band-Aid.
You know, I was hoping to be back and changing by now instead of just sitting here drying out slowly. But it's okay. The big problem with that was just that you stood or you sat for that half hour and we all walked really funny coming down the ramps.
I bet.
Another thing that will change is you'll probably be able to pick out at least the half and the full and the dopey and the goofy runners because of the way we walk on Sunday. Sometimes on Saturday, but definitely on Sunday. And a happy little pro tip, after the marathon, after the goofy or the dopey, we are not running for rides. We will not try to pass you to get into the line ahead of you. It ain't happening. No. You know, we can hobble, but for the most part, we're like, we'll walk. We'll take it easy. And we're talking about this pre-show. A lot of times after you've raced, yeah, you'll walk around the parks. But the idea of climbing into a ride, especially if it's something where you've got to stoop down to get in and, like, sit down where you kind of climb down into the car for test track,
right,
that hurts. And so you start to rethink, do I really want to ride that today or come back Monday, Tuesday after I've had a good night's sleep and, you know, ibuprofened up and whatnot. So it's kind of easy to avoid us or to beat us to the rides. Thursday, Friday, the 5K, 10K, those things are done so early that really the transportation isn't affected. I think that they both start at 5:30. Something. Not as early as something like that, but with a 16-minute per mile pace, your 5K is done 6:30, 7 o'clock. And really, they're packing up the cones and the timing mats and all that pretty early. The 10K is done by 8, same thing. And so there might be a little hiccup if you've got an early morning ADR. But even then, they're centered in one park. So unless you're going to whatever park happens to be hosting the 5K and 10K.
Right.
You'll avoid it really, really easily.
Yeah, it seems to me that anymore, really the biggest issue with marathon weekend at the parks is that, and it's maybe a little strange, you know, especially this past year, it seemed that it got really difficult to find resort bookings, like the resort rooms booked up pretty quickly for marathon weekend. And we weren't seeing a lot of, you know, discount availability, especially, you know, as it got close to marathon weekend. And the resort overall felt kind of crowded, but it really didn't seem to translate at all into the attractions being crowded. Yes, restaurants were more crowded. Yes, resorts were more crowded. But I did not notice real increases in attraction wait times.
Yeah, I can see that because, like, especially for the people doing the goofy or the dopey, you're getting up really early, 3-4 days in a row. And so you start to just, it's 8 o'clock, I'm done.
Oh, yeah. After dinner, the parks were empty.
Yeah, because like all the runners have headed back to go to sleep. And even before that, like if it's a normal trip, I might be there at 7 or 8 o'clock for rope drop. And we do as many things as we can throughout the course of the day. Whereas I ran a 5K this morning or I ran a 10K and tomorrow morning I've got to get up and run a half marathon. I'm not going to push all the – I'm not going to do as much because I just don't want to wear myself out and then pay for it at, you know, mile 12 tomorrow.
Right.
So I think a lot of the runners, from what I've heard, just talking with runner friends and whatnot, a lot of them will come and they start the vacation with the races. And then the real vacation is like 3 or 4 days after the races are done. And then trying to enjoy the parks then. But before that, they're staying mostly at the hotel. They may not even have park days.
Right. Now, one thing that's interesting, and I think it's just a function of this year's calendar, because I'm glancing at it now and it jumps out at me. New Year's Day this year is a Friday, which means that, you know, people who are at Walt Disney World for the holiday season, which is always a peak time, that holiday season, it seems to me, is extending this year, maybe a little longer than it might otherwise, because with, you know, Friday being New Year's Day, you know, that becomes a holiday. Then it's Saturday, Sunday. So, you know, it's Monday, January 4th becomes almost the getaway day for the holiday crowd now, right? Because the holiday got extended all the way through January 3rd with, you know, normally scheduled days off kind of thing. And then the marathon weekend starts up just 2 days later. So I expect early January is going to be busier at Walt Disney World than it has been, you know, in recent years, because usually there's a few more days in between, you know, from that there's a bit of a break between the holiday crowd that's kind of staying over and the marathon weekend crowd.
Yeah, it looks like you really don't hit a downtime pocket until about the 11th or so, and then you got a little time there before MLK weekend kicks in.
Yeah, exactly. So you've got like 1 week there between the end of the marathon weekend and Martin Luther King Jr. holiday weekend, where there's a nice lull. The parks get almost empty. You get those great, you know, Magic Kingdom at a one, where you can just kind of, you know, throw the touring plan out the window and run from attraction to attraction and do whatever you want.
Get to ride some of them twice in a row without getting off.
Yeah, yeah. So you get about a week of that, right up until the Martin Luther King holiday weekend. And, you know, that's a weekend where, again, you get this crowd spike for pretty much, you know, Friday through Monday, which would be January 15th through the 18th. And then that crowd disappears. You know, that's a weekend crowd that, you know, hits Walt Disney World hard. And then you get this nice long stretch, pretty much, you know, into almost the, well, until Super Bowl Sunday, really, right? Until February 7th and really on almost to the middle of February before real crowds pick up again at Walt Disney World. Now, Matt, you were saying that February is often when you're traveling. Is that kind of the time period that you like to hit, or are you later in the month?
Yeah, I mean, last year it was the early part of February, and we were actually there in a park for Super Bowl Sunday. I think we were at Universal that day, but it was really low crowds no matter what all throughout that whole week. You know, the biggest strike against it might have been the downside of the weather is that it's almost too cold to do things like swimming and stuff like that, but it's an easy trade-off to make.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that because, you know, we've been talking about all the great things about low crowd levels and, you know, sometimes good discounts and lower rates overall. But, you know, there are some downsides. The weather can be kind of unpredictable. You know, James, do I remember right that you've done a marathon weekend when the weather was quite a bit colder than you expected?
Well, the wine and dine back in November.
Oh, okay.
Last year, that was unseasonably cold. Okay. As compared to the earlier in the, you know, in January of 2014, the marathon weekend was actually warmer than.
Right.
Yeah, okay. I've done it with frost conditions a couple times.
Well, yeah, and so that's what I was getting at. Actually, is that, you know, you guys have hit on exactly the point that I was going to make, which is, you know, maybe the downside. We talked about how the weather can be more moderate in the winter, but Orlando weather in January and February can be just a total Jekyll and Hyde situation. And you can have, you know, an early January, like James was talking about, where, you know, your daily temps are creeping into the 80s in January. And you can also have them, as Richard has experienced on some marathon weekends and even maybe more frequently lately in early February, where the temperatures are, you know, frost conditions.
Yeah, it's definitely a good idea to kind of deal with some layers. Some mornings especially are when it's going to be the coldest. So if you can have a few layers that you can shed throughout the day, by the afternoon, it's usually not quite as bad. But it can be definitely, you know, highs in the 50s and 60s some days. And other days, like you said, might be up in the 80s. So you just never know.
Yeah.
Now, if you're coming from the north, though, you know, 50s and 60s, and at that point, it's like, shorts!
Yeah, it's shorts until your kids say they want to go swimming, and you're like, how about we go to the park?
but it is kind of fun. You can, you know, play spot the locals based on how bundled up they are in 60-degree weather.
Well, now, and that's also the times when you discover, you know, as the evening temperature, when the sun drops back down, you know, the temps start to drop again, and, you know, it drops into the 40s and you're waiting for Fantasmic. Anybody ever tried finding a pair of pants at Walt Disney World?
They have sweatpants. I know that.
Sometimes.
I have seen sweatsuits.
But they are often not easy to find.
That would
not
going to
be your cheapest option for pants.
Well, they're your only option.
But yeah, it's a challenge, you know, something to be aware of. I know that I know they're one of the first Diz Dads weekends. I don't think it was the first year, probably the second year, where, you know, it did get cold, especially in the evening. And for part of the trip, and I'd only brought one pair of jeans, which was, you know, fine until I spilled something on them, and then you know, it was a little chilly when the only options were shorts. because you know, I had just hadn't planned for it. So shame on me. Should be smarter. And the other thing we should mention is that, there is a bit of a downside, and we alluded to it a little bit, in that because of the colder weather at times, January and February is also a time that Disney takes advantage of the fact that there are fewer people clamoring for certain types of attractions and uses that time to do refurbishments.
Splash Mountain.
Water parks.
Yes.
Actually, the water parks are, sometimes are just closed because it's cold.
Right.
You know, if the daily temp isn't going to hit, what, 60, 65, they don't open it.
Right. And that's usually what's going on is, you know, for most of the winter, they only have one or the other of the water parks open, right? They'll open Blizzard Beach while they do their, you know, annual kind of refresh of Typhoon Lagoon, and then they'll close Typhoon Lagoon while they do close Blizzard Beach while they do the refurb there and open Typhoon Lagoon. So you get one or the other. You also, somebody shouted Splash Mountain.
Yeah, that's me. My kids have yet to be on Splash Mountain because literally every time we've gone in the winter, it's been closed. So this fall will be their first big chance at it. So.
Yeah, so they basically and you know, on the one hand, I can't complain too much because I think that the animatronics have been kept in better condition because they've given up on, you know, trying to do that winter refurb on Splash in 2 weeks, and they really do seem to go ahead and close it for a month and, you know, do it right. But I know it's frustrating for people like Matt whose families travel, you know, take advantage of the off season and. Yeah, Splash is always down. Are there other attractions you can think of that are, you know, consistently down during this time period because they're frequently being refurbished in January and February?
It just always plan or makes sense to kind of check ahead a little bit, just see, set your expectations. You know, I mean, there's going to be stuff all year round. There's certainly shorter oftentimes in the right. Summertime, but you know, you just never know until you look. Cause it's not uncommon for them to take a good month or more in those cases, where they know it's a lower crowd period.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I know Cali River Rapids is almost always closed for a chunk of time in January and February.
Yeah, unfortunately,
you really
that one
want to ride it if it's cold?
No, you don't. And yet the kids wanted to get right back on last time because it was no line. And I'm like, well, there's a reason for that.
Those were the people who were smart enough not to get in the line in the first place.
Well, see, it depends on how wet you get the first time. If you don't get very wet, you're thinking, oh, this isn't that bad. And then invariably, you know, the second time, that's when you get soaked.
Right, of course.
That's when the hypothermia kicks in, yeah.
All right, so continuing our review of the February calendar, you know, as I was saying, the crowd levels drop down, and then it's not until mid-February, really, you get a bump. There is always a crowd, for whatever reason, at Walt Disney World for Super Bowl Sunday, and this year Mardi Gras is really early, and so February 9th is Mardi Gras, Tuesday, February 9th, and then you get this really intense about 10-day period during which we have Valentine's Day on a Sunday, followed by President's Day, which is a holiday on Monday, and then that next weekend is the Princess Half Marathon weekend. So for about 10 days, you've got crowd levels that approximate, you know, Thanksgiving time. I mean, I'm looking at a week solid of 10-10-9-9-8-7-8 for crowd levels, taking you basically from Valentine's Day through Princess Half. And actually, it was a 9 the day before that. So starting on Saturday, February 13th, you know, you get Thanksgiving, dare I say, almost Christmas-level crowds for a period of about 10 days there. So, James, you're planning for that already?
Yes, we are. My wife has decided to do the Princess Half Marathon weekend.
Okay.
So I'm not sure she's doing. We haven't decided what race she's doing yet. But we are going to be going, and then, you know, and we've done President's Week before. My wife being a teacher, it's hard for us to do anytime when the kids are in school or when she's also in school. Sure. So we've done President's Week. It's crowded, but I'd if I'm going to be there during one of the big weeks of the year, where you see those kind of crowd levels, I think that would be my top choice over Christmas, over Easter, or over any of the big summer weeks like July 4th. I think President's Week is one, you know, because of the more moderate temperatures, it's easier for me to handle those types of crowds. You don't have the added factors like the humidity and heat, you know, that are already, you know, so your irritation level is a much lower, your boiling point is much higher. You know, you're not close to that yet, and so the crowds aren't enough to really push you up to that point.
That makes sense.
And sometimes you can just find a different way to tour, especially if you have the luxury of knowing that you might get there again the next year or maybe again in that fall or something like that, that just kind of avoid some of the headliners and you can still have a good time even if it is a 7 or 8 or 9.
Right. And you know, the parks are busy enough that this is the one time of what is normally the off season where you see those really extended park hours. February 13th, you get Magic Kingdom open until 3 a.m. on a Saturday with extra magic hours. And that doesn't happen very often in the wintertime. Now, it might be a little chilly, but, you know, I think it would be pretty cool to see the Magic Kingdom that late at night in the winter just because, you know, the sun goes down earlier, so you get a longer, you know, nighttime experience in the parks.
Yeah, that's definitely one of our favorite memories. It was the time when we went out to dinner a little later evening kind of thing and really didn't even hit the parks until 8 or 9 and we're just out until super late and the kids just had a blast. But sometimes you pay for it the next day. It's good to have kind of some downtime after one of those. But
yeah, definitely a good point. You want to take some of that downtime afterwards to recover, especially when the weather is challenging because, you know, you're going to stress your immune system if you really do kind of, you know, push it, go, go, go when it's both, you know, cold and crowded. All right. So that really is the last of the big crowd bumps for the winter. Once you get through the Princess half marathon weekend, you get really moderate crowd levels through the end of February and into March, really all the way until, you know, sort of just before, like, St. Patrick's Day weekend. You know, that week before St. Patrick's Day gets busy again. And continuing through there, that's when, you know, Easter is early, is fairly early this year. It's March 28th. So, you know, starting the middle of March, your crowds bump back up. But, you know, up until about March 11th or so, crowds stay pretty moderate. From you know, after President's Day week or after Princess Half Marathon weekend through, you know, early March. So we've talked a little bit about the crowd issues and events and things. Let's just, you know, a few minutes here talk briefly about things that places that are particularly reflective for you of winter at Walt Disney World, maybe a favorite resort or favorite restaurant for this time of year, and maybe uniquely so for some reason. I don't know, Richard. Can you think of either a resort or a restaurant that to you really says, you know, winter at Walt Disney World?
That one's actually kind of tough. Like we have one that we do for my wife's birthday when we're there, but that's November. And then usually by the time we get down there for marathon weekend, like all the Christmas stuff is being taken down. So,
right. Yeah. It's definitely not holiday stuff. That's
right.
Kind of
it's
why I was
no
curious to see what people would think of.
Yeah, we don't, like when we've gone for marathon weekend, it's really, we don't have like a set, you know, this is where I have my pre-race meal or that, you know, there's nothing like that. It's been kind of just, we're here so that, you know, dad can run and
Right.
So Mom and the kids can go off and play in the parks.
Well, so for you, these winter trips are really driven by the event. And so, you know, for example, you like to stay at the Contemporary because of the access to the race events.
Yeah. Well, you've mentioned. We did that once. We've done Wilderness Lodge a couple times. And I must say I very much enjoyed taking the monorail to the race, but coming back via the monorail, not so much.
Okay.
And a lot of that just has to do, you finish the race and you can walk 50 yards or so and get onto a bus that will take you to whatever resort, unless you're using the monorail resorts. And then you have to walk all the way across the parking lot,
right,
up the ramps. I was like, in the morning, this wasn't that bad.
Yeah, but that incline back up the ramp, I can imagine, is pretty
unpleasant.
That was
26 miles ago. Now it hurts.
Sure.
And so, yeah, that was kind of a downside. But, yeah, the... We definitely indulge a bit more, though, I think, with the winter trips as far as food items, because August, it's just too hot and you don't really want to eat. But the January, February trips, it's a little colder. You know, maybe you have something warm to drink somewhere. You know, my son has developed a taste for coffee, so... Yeah, there are a couple decent spots we go to for that. But
there you go.
Yeah, we don't really have – there's not really a resort or anything that screams winter to us. I mean, if we want the winter effect, we go in November after they've started putting up their Christmas stuff.
Okay. How about you, Matt?
Yeah, I don't think we really even thought about the season or anything when we planned ours. Like you said, you might be a little bit more interested in some comfort food or some, you know, heartier meals that time of year, but I don't think it really factored into our ADRs at all, really in any way.
Yeah, I mean, the only one I can think of that really, to me, is you know, feels like a winter spot for me is Ohana, just because of the, you know, marathon weekend, Diz Dad's convention tradition of, you know, the big group Ohana meal. So it evokes those memories. But I think that one's kind of backwards, right? I mean, I associate the restaurant with that time period because of the restaurant first, not because of the time period. I think that I do maybe think a little bit more about resort dining in general in the winter, because in the winter, you know, there's the park hours, as we talked about, are shorter. So you're not, you know, so compelled to, like, you know, dine in the resort or in the park, because you want to get back out and, you know, spend more time in the park. It's not such a big deal to, you know, have dinner at 6 o'clock and, you know, be out of the parks, because you're not in a rush to get back to the park. The park's closing in another hour or so anyway. I don't know, James, how about you? Anything that you can think of in terms of winter special stuff?
Well, I was just thinking, would we actually do the opposite in terms of our thinking, because, you know, we're coming out of a cold climate in the winter and we really want to accentuate the fact that we're in a warmer climate and we're on vacation. So, like, going, you know, so resorts like the Caribbean Beach Club, we've never stayed at the Polynesian, but, you know, but to stay there and get that tropical feel, at least, even though the temperatures aren't quite there.
Sure.
But that, and then it just makes for great, you know, for torturing our friends at home, and when we send pictures and we say, hey, look where we are, you know,
sure.
Even though it's not, I mean, it's probably not as hot as we'd like it to be, but, you know, we're at the beach and we at least got that atmosphere. And it's kind of like, and when I think about it, like in the summer, you know, it doesn't really matter, but like when we go to Winter Summerland, you have the choice between the two courses.
Sure.
In the summer, we're always choosing the winter course because we want that, like, to kind of, like, you know, like,
I get that.
Was the kind of coolest thing, but then think that, hey, this is unique because we're, you know, we're in the middle of summer and we're playing in the snowy course. So if we go and play at Winter Summerland in the winter, then we're going to play the summer side for that, you know, for the
right.
same reason.
Makes sense. I get that. And maybe that is part of why, to me, you know, Ohana fits in there. Because there's the whole thing about, you know, kicking back in January with a Lapu Lapu, you know, the fruity tropical drink with the umbrella in it that just makes you, you know, feel like a beach. All right. So what I wanted to just as we wrap up here is to go around one last time and have everybody, you know, come up with maybe one other thing about traveling in this January, February, winter time period that you really enjoy about Walt Disney World, you know, specific to that time period. And, you know, Richard, why don't you lead us off here with something about those January, February trips that you especially like about it being January, February?
I think they help kind of break up the whole winter blahs, you know, coming from the north.
Yeah.
They're usually a good chance. It gets us out, gets us away. Yeah. Usually it may not be warm, you know, by Florida standards. I think for the February trip last year, it was about 55 or 60 as a high, and it rained and whatnot. But that was a big, huge change from 10.
Right.
Yeah, sure. It was much, much warmer. And so, especially when it's been a bad winter or something, getting to Disney where it's warmer and where it's a vacation and it's, yeah, it's just enough that, yeah, we're only there for 3 or 4 days, whatever, but it breaks up that big, long block of winter that seems to start back in November and run through March.
All right. Good.
Yeah,
good.
So it's a mental break as much as a physical one.
Sure. And how about you, Matt? What's something you really appreciate about those February trips you've been taking?
Well, if you're really careful about avoiding all the weeks that we were discussing, you can hit some amazingly low lines. I mean, we had the example of being able to ride things twice in some cases. We definitely had that kind of experience. I think we hit Barnstormer one time, like 3 times in about 15 minutes. And those experiences just kind of keep you really charged up and are pretty awesome. And you can find other parts of the year where you'll find similar kind of crowd levels. But if you can time it just right, it's totally worth all the other trade-offs. And then certainly avoiding the sub-zero temps is key. Because I think the last time we went in February, it was, I think, 30 plus days of sub-zero temps up here. So being able to go outside and not have it hurt is a nice thing.
Yes, yes. The cartoon that was making the rounds frequently this last winter about, you know, my face hurts when I go outside. Why do I live where it hurts to go out, where my face hurts to go outside?
Yeah, exactly. It's just it's a nice novelty. You know, it's good to just fit it all in there. And the one other tip just to throw out there is, you know, you are basically talking about going right after the holidays when money isn't always that tight. So, you know, planning ahead like we're talking about is kind of key, not only from the ADR point of view, but also just to prepay some stuff before you even hit the holidays, just so you kind of know that that's taken care of. So it's just kind of nice to not be worrying about that on top of everything else all of a sudden right after you're paying off the Christmas credit card and whatnot.
That's a great point. I'm glad you mentioned that because, you know, I also think I notice an inordinately large proportion of people who end up, you know, having to cancel January and February trips, maybe because they didn't, you know, think ahead and you know, their 45 days in advance deadline for final payment was far enough out that, you know, it wasn't on their mind and maybe it should have been.
Yeah, or that 45 days is right around Christmas time, which is not great. So.
Right. All right. James, how about you? What's something about those winter trips that you really especially appreciate and want to share with people?
I'm going to echo a little bit what Richard was saying about how it's a nice break, not just from the winter and the climate, but just, you know, the kids are in the middle of the school year. My wife's in the middle of her school year, you know, unlike me who works all year long. So our summer vacations to Disney are like a vacation while we're already on vacation. In the winter, you know, that's a true vacation, like where everybody's getting a break.
Yeah.
And so there's something and pair that with the typically lower crowds, or even when, you know, it's a President's Week and it's a little more crowded, there's just a more relaxed feel. Like I actually feel like I'm on vacation and I feel like I'm recharging and I'm ready to, you know, when I'm done, I feel like it was money well spent. As opposed, you know, not like it's not well spent in the summer, but it just feels more like a vacation at that time of year.
It's more refreshing when you're getting away from something as opposed to it just being a diversion. You know, it's an alternative to the day at the pool instead of being an alternative to, you know, a day in the office or in the classroom when you're taking those winter trips. Yeah, I mean, I think for me, one of the things, and I'm sort of dreading it, right? Because we took a trip this past fall in September, you know, last fall, and we pretty much said when we got back that, you know, that was the last one of those kind of trips we were going to be able to take for a while, because my daughter's starting middle school. She just had her first year of middle school, and coming back from that September trip, you know, this was the first time that it was really a challenge to get caught back up at school and get back in the swing of things. And so it may be a while before we take, as James was talking about, you know, one of these trips that's a true break. And I think that's the biggest thing I'm going to miss. I also, though, you know, I'll probably continue to take the solo trip that I often take in January. And, you know, it's just a matter of exactly that, you know, getting away from the stress. I think January is a great time for it because the holidays tend to be really stressful family times. You know, you spend a lot of time, maybe more time with your family than you normally would, with more extended family. And so getting that break, for me, it's usually early January, but in January or February, you know, it's, I think, a decompressing experience. And I like it a lot. And you know, the crowd levels sort of tend to play into that, right? Because you're decompressing from the family stress and the holiday stress and all of that. And it's not as crowded and stressful in the parks themselves.
Yeah, and if you can sometimes put it off just a little bit later into February, it kind of gives you something to look forward to kind of survive the worst of the winter. So
sure, absolutely. All right. Well, you know, I think we've done a pretty good job of reviewing the things that we really enjoy about winter trips and giving you some useful information about planning ahead. This is coming out in mid-June. Those 180-day dates are coming up. So if you're looking at a January and February trip, now's the time. Start choosing resorts. Start looking at your ADR options. And if you're going to work with a travel agent, hey, get in touch with the travel agent. Always good to be working ahead of the game instead of trying to kind of scramble at the last minute and build a trip out of, you know, what's left over instead of getting to pick and choose what you would prefer. You've heard what we think and what we like about these trips. We'd love to hear from you and hear about what you like about winter at Walt Disney World. You can email us at podcast@dizdads.com. Visit our blog, dizdads.com, tweet us at Dizdads Podcast on Twitter, and participate in the discussions in our forums at boards.dizdads.com. We're also on Facebook at facebook.com/dizdadspodcast. And hey, if you're enjoying the show, it'd be a big help to us if you would stop by on iTunes and leave us a review. Those new reviews on iTunes help make it easier for people who are new listeners to find the show. And when the reviews get kind of stale, we tend to drop in the rankings and it's a little harder for people to find us. So if you're enjoying the show, please stop by iTunes, leave us a review. Frankly, if there are things you're not enjoying about the show, let us know that too. We don't know you're not enjoying it if you don't tell us. So, you know, our goal here is to bring people a show they enjoy, and we rely on your feedback to help us keep doing that. Until next time, I've been Aaron Ripmaster with James Cameron.
So long, everyone.
Matt Weir.
Hey, see you later.
And Richard Grady.
Good night, everybody.
Brought to you by Fairy Tale Journeys, an authorized Disney travel planner. Let us help you put together your next magical Disney vacation. Find us at fairytalejourneys.com. Let us sweat the details so you don't have to.